Today is Friday, July 13, 2007, and I'm Agent Ladybug, and we're on Exposed. Today we are most honored and very proud to have on as our very special guest the award-winning journalist Jim Marrs. Now, he's the author of quite a few New York Times bestsellers. One of them is Crossfire, The Plot That Killed Kennedy. And this book was the basis for Oliver Stone's film JFK. He's also written Rule by Secrecy, The Hidden History that connects the Trilateral Commission, Freemasonry, and the Great Pyramid. And he's come out with a new book called The Terror Conspiracy. It's called also Deception 9/11 and Loss of Liberty. So welcome, Jim Marrs. We're honored to have you on.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you today.
Now, Eric Hufschmid is going to be asking some questions of you too, Jim, when we get on with the show. Now, Jim, my first question is, who are the ruling elite, the secret rulers? Some people call them Illuminati, and some call them the shadow government behind the scenes. Are they the 13 corporate banking families? What's your impression on who these people are?
Yes, I think that's a fair assumption. It's a collection of the wealthy banking families and along with some of the royalty of Europe.
Now, who's truly behind the attacks on America on the 9/11 situation? What's your opinion on this? Who benefited from this terrible attack? And it's basically an attack on our liberty as well, correct?
That's true. You have to ask yourself, you have to be your own detective. You cannot rely on official pronouncements backed by little or nothing. And basically that's all we have to date is one official conspiracy theory, and that's all it is. Even the FBI refuses to put bin Laden's name as wanted for the crime of 9/11 because, as an FBI spokesman said, and quite correctly, we have no hard evidence that Osama bin Laden was involved, and that's exactly true. So you have to ask yourself, who had the means, the motives, and the opportunity? Okay, and now let's look at Osama bin Laden first. Did he have the means? That's iffy. Possibly had lots of money, probably could have hired some people, okay, but did he have the motive? Well, not really. I mean, the only motive they've given us is that he hates our freedom and democracy. Well, I've traveled around the world pretty extensively, and I found that most people in the world, they don't hate our freedom and democracy, they envy it. They simply want a little bit for themselves. And if you'll go and check U.S. foreign policy over the past 60 years, you'll find that just about everything we do is to suppress freedom and democracy in all of these third world countries. And then you have to ask, did he have the opportunity? Could Osama bin Laden, a Muslim cleric using a computer in a cave in Afghanistan, truly overcome our $40 billion defense system of the United States of America? That is very, very questionable. Probably not, okay? Could he have arranged for the 9/11 Commission? No. Could he have arranged for the 9/11 Commission to cover up important aspects and bypass and ignore pertinent questions regarding the 9/11? No. So let's look at George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, and their collection of neocons. Did they have the means? Absolutely. Cheney has been Secretary of Defense. He's been White House staff, Chief of Staff. He was in charge of the top secret, the highest anti-terrorism group in the United States. He was appointed to that early on in the first Bush administration in 2000, about the same time that he was appointed to head that energy committee that went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled he did not have to tell the American people what they discussed in their energy committee, which of course led to brownouts, blackouts, overcharging in California, and the energy problems that we're having today. He also have to consider that Dick Cheney was formerly head of Halliburton, the largest oil supply company in the world. So they have a very direct interest in what happens to the oil, particularly in Iraq and Saudi Arabia. You have to look at the Bush connection to the Saudis. They're very close business and social friends. In fact, in the summer of 2000, the Bushes were invited to visit Saudi Arabia at the guest of the Saudi royals, and particularly the bin Laden family. In my book, The Terror Conspiracy, I outline all the information that pretty well shows that George W. Bush got his start in the oil business with Robusto Energy out of Houston with the bin Laden money. The money came from Salim bin Laden, the older brother of Osama bin Laden. This has never been made clear to the American public. And so they certainly had the means. Did they have the motive? Absolutely. They were all members of a neoconservative think tank called the Project for the New American Century. And in September of 2000, the PNAC issued a report called Rebuilding America's Defenses, in which they advocated invasion of Afghanistan, regime change in Iraq, and a buildup of U.S. military personnel in the Middle East to gain control over the oil supplies. Now, whoever authored that report was pretty dead on when they wrote, "This would be a hard sell to the American public unless there is a, quote, catalyzing and catastrophic event like a new Pearl Harbor," end quote. Well, they got it a year later in September of 2001. And did they have the opportunities? Of course. So they had the means, they had the motive, and they had the opportunities. So I think that serious investigation needs to be done into the proclaimed idea that 9/11 was what is known as a false flag operation. A false flag operation is simply committing an act and doing it in such a way that you cast the blame onto someone else. It's the same thing we did in grade school when one of your buddies would toss a spit wad at someone and then act all innocent. And when you laughed or, you know, made some comment, and you get blamed for it because you're the guy who's sitting there paying attention to what's going on. This is a false flag operation, and all the evidence points to 9/11 being a false flag operation.
Now, there were several war games going on, which involved both the FAA and NORAD, and this was
correct.
All being played out in the morning of September 11, 2001. And
correct.
These war games facilitated these attacks. But
correct.
In your
and
book,
could Osama,
and
could Osama
the 9/11. Yes.
Could Osama bin Laden have orchestrated these war game exercises that encompassed a good portion of American air defenses, including NORAD and including the FAA? I submit no.
So,
in fact, the question
is that's right. With the 9/11 Commission, why didn't they come out with these war game mentioned on a larger scale? Did they make any mention of it? In the commission?
As I recall, they made one mention to one of the war games, which was Guardian, in a footnote. Otherwise, they didn't mention it. In fact, for a year or so after 9/11, I was trying to tell everybody about these war game exercises, and a lot of people were saying it was just an internet rumor. And then we had Richard Clark, who was the at the time of 9/11 was in charge of the counterterrorism task force, who wrote a book. And on just within the first few pages, he said that on the morning of 9/11, when he called General Myers of NORAD and said, "Do you have any interceptors in the air?" The first thing Myers said was, "Well, we're in the middle of a war game exercise." I have now interviewed a Sergeant Lauro Chavez, who was in the Southern Command of the U.S. monitoring everything, and he said that not only were they under war game exercises, which for the first time in his experience had been classified top secret, you couldn't talk about them, but also one of the scenarios actually involved a hijacked airliner crashing into the World Trade Center, and he said they were astounded when somebody turned on CNN and they actually saw that planes were crashing into the World Trade Center. This again deserves serious and in-depth investigation. Who ordered these war game exercises? Who approved proved a scenario of hijacked planes crashing into the World Trade Center, and how in the world could that have happened on the very morning that the thing they were simulating turned into reality?
Now, do you see a kind of a orchestrated scenario happening repeatedly? We have the JFK scenario, then we have the Warren Commission, then we have the 9/11, then we have the 9/11 Commission.
Exactly.
It seems like it's a game plan always, and never raise up the serious matter, the truth to come out. And by the time that they just start into it, people get all riled up, another attack comes. Do you see that this is a game plan of theirs? Perpetually?
Of course. If everything's copacetic and everything's okay and normal, you cannot get the average guy to go along with tyrannical and dictatorial measures. But if you stage some sort of an attack, blame it on some nebulous, faceless opponents, get everybody fearful, then all too many people will say, yeah, sure, take my liberties, but just protect me. This is a game plan. This goes all the way back to Hitler and the Nazis setting fire to the German parliament or Reichstag and blaming it on communist terrorists, and then taking control of the German government, setting up gun control, individual identification, registration, and then the concentration camps, and that was the true beginnings of the Nazi Third Reich.
Now, this is very interesting. During the time that the 9/11 attacks were underway, no one was allowed. The public was denied to fly, and about 140 Saudis, and this was about two dozen members of the Osama bin Laden's own family, were allowed to fly. Now,
exactly.
You said in your book, who authorized this bin Laden evacuation? What do you think about this, Jim Marson?
Well, we know one person who authorized it because, again, Richard Clark, who was head of counterterrorism at that time, has admitted that he authorized the flight of these bin Ladens during the no-fly zone. But he said he was assured that by the FBI that they would be thoroughly interrogated before they were allowed to leave, but this did not happen. Okay? Now, Richard Clark says he authorized it, but Richard Clark, as powerful as he was not in a position to do that on his own. Someone higher than the counterterrorism chief had to give those authorization, and that means it had to come probably from the White House. And this, again, deserves serious and in-depth and impartial investigation. You know, if you'll recall, George W. Bush initially wanted Henry Kissinger to head his 9/11 investigation, the very man who probably is almost single-handedly was responsible for U.S. foreign policy for the past 30 years, which everyone agrees precipitated the attack on America. Now, that's like putting the fox in charge of the hen house and saying, gee, what happened to the hens? Well, I don't know. Everything was okay. It must be the wily old fox. And so, you know, it's absolutely ridiculous. And the thing is, I understand how people who want power, want to maintain power, will lie, cheat, steal, whatever they have to do that. I understand that. I don't agree with that, but I understand it. What I don't understand is why the American people just rolls over and accepts these official pronouncements by people who actually, instead of being in a leadership position, probably should be key suspects.
Exactly. Now, what about the hijackers themselves? What, in your research, did you find out about the hijackers, and are some of these hijackers supposedly still out there and they're not in as rubble dust?
Absolutely. What we now know, and has been widely reported in the media outside the United States, is that at least seven of the men who were named by the FBI as being the 9/11 hijackers, these people who were identified are still alive and walking around the Middle East, and all of them said, I had nothing to do with this. Now, I'm not trying to say that the people who hijacked the airplanes are still alive. I'm saying that they used fake identities, stolen identities, and the identities that we've been given and are still being given today as the hijackers are not the real hijackers. Even the head of the FBI, just a few days after 9/11, admitted that they had used fake IDs and phony visas and they weren't really certain who they were. And yet, a few days later, they gave us this list of names and said, this is them. 9/11 Commission rubber stamped this identification, and they today, and I guess will go down in history as being the 9/11 hijackers, and yet that's not them. So who were these people? Okay, we do know that they keep harking back to Al-Qaeda, which translates into the base. Well, you know, for a time I thought that might mean that, well, that means their hidden headquarters somewhere, the base for their terrorist organization. But I have it on reliable authority that what that refers to is the CIA's database of Arab mercenaries who are on their payroll, who they can get to do most anything. And in fact, if you'll go and really start digging into the background of Al-Qaeda, you'll find that it is an offshoot of the old Muslim Brotherhood, which was taken over before World War II by Nazi intelligence. So it was a Nazi organization. They were arrested after the war by British intelligence, who then later turned them over to the Central Intelligence Agency. The CIA, of course, used this Muslim Brotherhood, this Al-Qaeda, to bring mercenaries from Saudi Arabia, Syria, Jordan, and other Arab countries into Afghanistan during the 1980s when George Bush was in charge because his vice president, he was running the country after Reagan got shot only 2 months after he took office. And they were our surrogate fighters in Afghanistan against the Soviet incursion there back during the Reagan administration. During the Kosovo conflict, it was Al-Qaeda, backed by the CIA, that armed and trained the Kosovo Liberation Army, which was our faction that we were supporting in Kosovo. So we've created them. We've been running them for years. Why are we supposed to suddenly just believe because somebody says so that they have turned renegade and that they are now indiscriminately attacking the United States? It doesn't make much sense.
Now, also, you had a chapter on were the hijacked planes remotely controlled. What's your impression about that?
Well, I think based on all the evidence we know, and the thing that really strikes me, being an award-winning aviation aerospace writer and knowing something about aviation, having covered plenty of plane crashes and aviation-related stories, is the fact that all four of these airliners, their transponders, were turned off almost simultaneously, about the same time. Now, the odds that four separate hijack crews could attack, overpower the crew of an aircraft, take control, locate the transponders, and know enough to know how to turn them off is just almost beyond the realm of possibility. However, if they were captured electronically with Global Hawk remote control technology, which is off the shelf, it's there. It's been there for years. Going back to the 80s, all of the wide-bodied big Boeing jets, the 737s, 57s, and 67s, are all built to fly-by-wire, which means they are computer-controlled. And if you can override any signal and put a stronger signal into play, you can capture those computers and you can control those planes independently from a remote location and guide them to land safely or to crash into buildings or whatever you want them to do, regardless of the desires of the hijackers or of the flight crew.
Now, how much of a role do you think Building 7 had in the collapse? There was an ongoing investigation into various corporations like Enron, and Building 7 was supposedly housing a lot of the information, including the Pentagon. In your research, did you find out how many of these corporations had their files in these buildings and the whole game plan was to destroy them? Did you find that in your research?
Yes, I did. Building 7, also known as the Solomon Brothers Building, was nestled right between the U.S. Post Office Building and the Verizon Building across Versey Street from the World Trade Centers. And at 5:25 on the afternoon of September the 11th, 2001, it totally collapsed straight down symmetrically into its own foundation, not seriously damaging the two buildings to either side of it, with the walls all falling inward, which is the telltale sign of a controlled implosion. And in Building 7 were several government offices, including FBI offices and CIA offices, but also including the Security and Exchange Commission. And the Security and Exchange Commission has publicly admitted that they lost over 7,000 prosecution files on Enron, World.com, Tyco, and some of those corporate malfeasance. Another interesting thing, I can't verify this, but there is some scuttlebutt that also destroyed in the collapse of Building 7 were old SEC records, including those files concerning the prosecution of George Bush's grandfather, Prescott Bush, in 1942 under the Trading with the Enemies Act, where they accused him of being nothing but a financial front man for Hitler and the Nazis.
Now, in your research, did you find anything about a major gold heist? We saw it right in front of our faces where Brink's truck, one truck after another, was loading up all the gold that was being stored down below in the vaults. Do you think that there could have been a gold heist, and where is this gold now?
Well, that gold obviously went somewhere, and I think that there was a good chance that they might have got away with that without anyone knowing that they had removed the gold from the World Trade Center, except apparently one of the trucks broke down, and that caused them to have to go in and gather that stuff up and take it out separately. Now, this is an issue that I have looked at. It's very murky. You can't get any information. No one in a position of authority is talking. There may be some reasonable cause for this. If word got out that we had lost, a huge portion of our gold supply, it could adversely affect the economy and the U.S. dollar. But on the other hand, as you say, it could have been a heist, and we definitely need to know what happened to this gold. And this is simply another area that has been disregarded and instead should have been vigorously and objectively investigated.
Now, why isn't the FBI connecting the dots? Is this, do you think, a game plan that the CIA and the FBI are all party to? And do you see a correlation between these two forces as well? As perpetrating the entire debacle that happened on 9/11?
Well, first off, you have to understand how this pyramid of power operates. I know FBI people, I've known CIA people, and for the most part, they're good, honest, hardworking people. It's just like saying the government did this, the government did that. Well, we're not talking about your postman, and we're not talking about the IRS agent. Despised as he may be, he nevertheless is doing a lawful and job, as a government representative. And I think most of the people in the CIA and in the FBI are probably conscientious and hardworking people. But these organizations are highly compartmentalized. They don't know what the next office is doing, and they all come under this pyramid of power, which means that the power all flows down from the very pinnacle and not up from the bottom. And this is why we have seen that in the weeks and even years leading up to 9/11, not only were warnings coming from the FBI and the CIA ignored at higher echelons, but there were actually steps taken to block meaningful investigations into the terrorist activity, into Al-Qaeda, and into the very structures that we are being told were behind the attacks of 9/11. So again, you cannot broad stroke the CIA or the FBI. You have to go for who had control over the CIA and the FBI.
Right now, there's a major push to constantly bring out dead bodies, but do you think that there are shiploads constantly of drugs coming from Afghanistan, and Canada now is playing a key role in bringing out these dead bodies? And during the Air America in Vietnam, that film showed that that's the way that they transported this huge, huge cocaine trade that seemed to escalate even bigger as years went by, heroin and cocaine. Have you seen this in your research as well?
This is an ongoing problem that has never been seriously addressed in the United States. Here we are supposedly in the middle of the war against drugs, and yet the rumors, the stories, the whistleblowers for years have pointed to people and individuals within the CIA and within other government agencies that are actually participating in the flow of drugs. We know from the Iran-Contra scandal, they were running guns down to John Hull's ranch. They were bringing cocaine back in. I even spoke to one of the CIA Black Ops pilots who said he actually landed in a U.S. Air Force base and U.S. airmen were offloading the cocaine. Now, this is a terrible thing to allege, but it needs to be investigated. What I can tell you is that the Taliban in Afghanistan, which I have not particularly any good thing to say about, nevertheless, they were religious fanatics. And as such, by the year 2000, they had destroyed virtually 90% of the poppy fields in Afghanistan. In other words, they had just about eliminated the nucleus of the world heroin trade. And yet, when America went in there and occupied the country, since then, it's been nothing but ever-growing plots of ground planting more and more poppies to the point to where this year, according to BBC, according to the New York Times, according to reputable news organizations, they are going to have a bumper crop of poppies, and probably the price of heroin will go down. Okay, so it seems absolutely ridiculous that we claim we're fighting a war on drugs, and yet they did absolutely nothing to stop the flow of drugs out of Afghanistan. In fact, we have allowed them to replant something on the order of 500,000 acres again with poppies. So you can see the hypocrisy behind our proclaimed war on drugs.
Now, you devoted a chapter on Israeli foreknowledge. What did your research now come up with this Israeli foreknowledge? Who are the players in this? The Mossad as well? Did you see that?
Absolutely. Did you notice that just in the past couple of days, all the news media is making a big deal out of the fact that they had caught one guy in Dearborn, Michigan, who, after the fact and after it makes any difference, finally had admitted that he had been a spy for Saddam Hussein. One man. And yet we got very little or no coverage of the 200-person Israeli spy ring that was expelled from the United States in the summer of 2002. Among these Israeli spies were the five Israelis that were arrested for filming the destruction of the World Trade Center towers. And according to the witnesses at the scene, they were smiling and laughing and high-fiving each other as if this was a really good thing. That has not been told to the American public. And that gets back to one of my biggest boogaboos, which is greedy, grasping, ambitious officials that, you know, that's been going on throughout the history of the world. Bloody attacks, falsely blamed on somebody else to further an agenda, that's been going on since the history of the world. But we live in this little matrix woven about us by the electronic media, which styles themselves as the watchdog media, and yet the media today in the United States is under total control of about four corporations, all owned by multinational owners, most of them not even Americans, and they control what we see and hear, and I think it's absolutely abysmal. How can we hold our heads up and say that we're a free people when we don't even have free access to information?
Now, do you see Big Brother emerging? The technology is coming down the wire where they want identity cards. They want to have the Vera chip in all of us. where is this going to end? What do you think about this whole situation of what you talked about, the loss of liberty? This is the big thing, isn't it? Isn't it, Jim?
It certainly is. And this is something that we have to be totally cognizant of. What's basically happening is, if you want to get an idea of what the world's going to look like in about another 20 years, go back and read George Orwell's 1984. The world, and, by the way, George Orwell was a pen name. His real name was Eric Arthur Blair, and he was a socialist over in England, a Fabian socialist, and highly connected, worked for the BBC. And I think that he understood, if not got the word on what the game plan was. And you'll find that the game plan is to divide the world into three economic blocks. In 1984, it was Oceania, Asiana, and East Asiana. In the real world, it's going to be the European Union, the North American Union, and the Asian Union, and they will constantly play one off against another to maintain the tension and fear that is required to maintain their power and control. That's the game plan. And we're moving steadily in that direction.
That's right. And it was rather interesting to see this come out of the movie that Michael Moore just recently did, Sicko. A British fellow was talking about how the Americans are controlled. He stated that they are controlled through fear, this fear factor, I call it terronomics, and also through humiliation. Chinese talk about the same thing, the way that the Communist Party rules the populace. Do you see this as well, Jim?
Absolutely. The fear thing is incredible. Back during the time of World War II, when we probably had good reason to be fearful, in that the Nazis had conquered Europe, had made no secret of their plans for conquering the United States, and also the Japanese militarists had conquered most of the Pacific, and they too had proclaim their designs on the United States, and yet our leader at the time, President Roosevelt, said the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And he was, and in World War II, the whole idea is that we were all Americans fighting for democracy and freedom, and that whether you were brown, yellow, black, white, whether you were Jewish or Muslim or Christian or whatever, that we were all Americans, we were all in it together, and we were all going to see that this country upheld the highest principles of freedom and democracy. Today, it's one terrorist alert after another, and the whole atmosphere is to generate fear and divisiveness among the American people. And of course, it's the oldest methodology in the book, divide and conquer. And that's exactly what they're doing. And they keep everybody so stirred up fighting over individual issues that nobody can stop and get a clear picture of what's really going on.
That's right. Unless you're a journalist, you get a handle on all these stories, and it's in your head, but also in your data bank, in your information that you have. So a lot of people tend to get it, and they keep on bombarding you one after another. Do you see a pattern of numerology in this thing as well?
Well, first off, that is the matrix that I was speaking of. The people who are caught the worst are the people who are news junkies, who watch CNN or Fox News or ABC or NBC daily, and then read their local newspaper. And they, sadly, they really feel like that they're well-informed. Instead, they are caught up in a matrix that defines their worldview and sets the agenda on what they're supposed to be thinking about. And this is absolutely true. The way to break out of that is to turn off that TV and go on the Internet and scan the newsstands. Look for alternative sources of information. Broaden your horizons and start thinking for yourself. Now, as to your question about numerology, there's really no question that at the highest levels, there are people who definitely believe in this, believe in occult symbolism. Key thing to remember here is it doesn't really matter if you believe in that or not. The point is, they do. And one of the things that I have found that just blew me away is that all the major NASA space missions have all been, the time and date of the launchings have been set to correspond with the astrological alignment of the planets and stars. Hasn't got anything to do with the hard science that we always like to think is the basis of NASA space efforts. And that means that someone powerful enough to set the launch dates for NASA space missions to include the Apollo moon missions believed in this occultism enough that these launches were set to correspond with the alignment of the planets and stars. Incredible.
So I guess psychically picked up, blurted it out that there was going to be the tsunami 1 year later, exactly to the day. And I noticed the correlation also that the newspapers gave foreknowledge to, I guess, people that were short-selling stocks again. And I found a pattern with the 62 days. Interesting thing happened in the Canadian newspaper National Post. There was a banner head, but the words "La Tsunami," you could actually spell out the word in French, La Tsunami. And this was given 62 days prior to it. I made a note of it on the show, and lo and behold, everything that happened I saw. But I also saw this remote viewing. You devote a whole chapter to remote viewing. What did your research uncover on this remote viewing of 9/11?
Well, it's interesting. In my book, The Terror Conspiracy, you'll find the results of a remote viewing session that I ordered based on 11 qualified and tested remote viewers. And the results were quite interesting. For example, on the question of who was piloting the planes that crashed into the World Trade Center, the general response was no one. Again, Linden supports the idea that they were under remote control by Global Hawk technology. Also, I did ask, did George W. Bush have foreknowledge of the attacks? And the remote viewers said no. But when I asked, did Dick Cheney or his father, George Herbert Walker Bush, have advanced foreknowledge of the attacks, the answer was yes. So I think, again, remote viewing, which has been disparaged by the very government that spent more than $25 million and went through four separate administrations studying and then using operationally this methodology of remote viewing, is now saying, oh, there's really nothing to it. And I suspect that's because they don't want the average guy to know that he can study and refine his remote viewing, or better yet, do some very proper remote viewing sessions using a number of viewers to find out basic truth about what's going on in the world. It's interesting you ask about remote viewing, because my book, Psi-Spies, PSI Spies, is due for release in September, and it is the background history of remote viewing and the history of the operational use of remote viewing by first the CIA and then later the Intelligence and Security Command of the United States Army. Today, the government says, oh, well, we don't have any remote viewing units anymore, which is technically correct. What they've done now is they either contract their remote viewing out to former government remote viewers and their organizations, or they have individual remote viewers in certain units and agencies that provides information for that particular group. For example, the Rangers or the Delta Force or whatever.
That's rather interesting, because I've given our listeners all the time my remote viewing instincts, and this always hits right on the button. I, for some odd reason, see the exact scenario, what will come on the blue tube, but hours in advance or days in advance. So I have not studied how you do remote viewing, but I've actually seen these things, and I've made a note of it, and it's on the program that I've done. And
well, there are there are natural remote viewers, which apparently you are one. And you can increase your accuracy and increase your control over it by using these laboratory-tested methods that were developed, as I said, first by the CIA and then later by the Army and then later by the NSA. But anyone can practice remote viewing, and depending on your innate ability, you might be pretty good or not so good.
Now, I'm going to ask one last question, and then I'll give it over to Eric. What are you seeing that's developing now with George W. Bush getting in more and more with this Patriot Act, but bringing an axe behind closed doors, not even going to Congress and bringing this whole New World Order as they've got it underway. How do you see this emerging right now? Do you see another attack in your for voting or remote viewing as underway? Because this just came out in the mainstream media that they see it. Some massive attack is going to happen right quick. What do you think of this?
Well, I do not rely on my remote viewing, good, bad, or indifferent, but I do rely on my intellect and on studying the issues and on my experience. And what I see is that I think they will try to hold off any other serious terrorist attack as long as they can for a few reasons. Number one, if there's another huge one, it could very well rip the whole fabric of American society. We could go into martial law, which would be a whole new paradigm, and it's all sitting there waiting to happen. All Bush has to do is sign his name, and we would be under martial law. In fact, we are still operating under an emergency declaration that he made on September the 14th, 2001, and has not been rescinded, and that is why he has been able to say that he is a wartime president operating under emergency powers and has been able to push through all of this anti-constitutional legislation. But I do think there's a danger there in that if these people, these perpetrators of 9/11, if the public starts waking up to their complicity, and if there are court trials scheduled, if there are truthful investigations launched, then they will be forced to put their backs up against the wall, and at that point, I think there's a very good likelihood that they would launch a major terrorist strike to deflect attention away from them, to make people even more fearful and more agreeable to these unconstitutional acts. The time now is here to remain calm, cool, and collected, and not just go stampeding off the cliff with the rest of the lemmings.
Exactly. Now, Eric, do you have questions for Jim Mars?
Well, when you mentioned about numerology, I used to ignore all of that, but, you know, you mentioned Apollo.
I did, too.
Well, it seems so silly, but then you mentioned Apollo, and someone pointed out this 11 business. They're always doing 11, like September 11th, Apollo 11.
Right.
But have you looked into that? Because it doesn't look to me that they even landed on the moon. The whole thing was a hoax.
Well, there is a growing controversy there. I'm not quite to the point of saying we didn't go to the moon, but I am definitely at the point, based on my research, in saying that there are some very, very serious questions about the moon landings and about the official story and the official reporting of them, and I think there are some real problems there. But again, who's going to investigate? Who's going to look into it? And who's going to give us the straight of it? They simply brush that aside by saying, well, NASA says we went there, and we're supposed to just accept that.
Well, what's the 11 supposed to mean to these people?
Well, that gets back again to your numerology, and I have looked into that a little bit, but I'm kind of like you. I didn't really buy into that much to begin with, and it all seems just a little bit I don't know,
exile.
Weird, okay? All right. But, again, the point is, it doesn't matter what you and I think about it. The point is, you can clearly show that people in positions of power and authority are very serious about numerology and astrology and these other occult sciences.
Right. Well, and then when you mentioned the game plan, you know, you're talking about how they want all these nations to be fighting and break down into three parts. Who do you see as being part of this? Because, you know, it doesn't do any good to know what's going on until you can do something about it, and you can't do anything until you know who is it we're dealing with.
All right, let me see if I can give you the broad outline here. First off, we know the dictionary definition of fascism is the combining of government and corporate power. That's the very definition of fascism. In fact, the term came from the black-shirted fascistas of Mussolini back in fascist Italy. But Mussolini himself said that fascism wasn't really the correct term. The correct term is corporatism, okay? In other words, corporate control. And this is exactly what we see happening in the United States today. The difference being that in Nazi Germany and fascist Italy, the state gained control over the corporations to make this combination of state and corporate power known as fascism. In modern America, the corporations have gained control over the state. We know that the Congress people are all on the payroll of the big corporations. They're the ones that contribute all the money. They have the money, therefore they have the power. In fact, what we see is that today America has become more and more socialistic, and yet not in a good way, not in a way that the poor people are getting any benefits. We still don't even have a national health care plan like all the other intelligent nations. But instead, what we see is all the money flowing into corporate hands. Well, now, when you start looking at the corporations and the corporate structure of this country, you're talking about the Fortune 500, you're talking about the major corporations that run this country, and you're talking about millions of employees and millions of people who depend on these corporations for their livelihood. And it's really it's kind of a scary business because hardly anyone will bite the hand that feeds them. So how do we control this? We simply have to stand together, cast off our fear, and act in unison as Americans who only want the best benefits for America. We have seen this happen recently with Bush's immigration bill, which was a thinly disguised makeover of the same kind of amnesty bill that Lyndon Johnson passed back in the 60s and that Ronald Reagan passed in the 80s, and neither one of those did anything to stem the flow of illegal immigrants. All it did was stimulate it. And, of course, this is what the New World Order people want. They don't want borders. They want a North American Union, and the way they get that is by allowing unrestricted immigration to flood the country with people who can not speak or barely speak the language, have no sense of history or what the ideals and principles of this country are all about, and they become vulnerable to pure democracy, which is ruled by the majority. And they know they can control the majority because they control the mass media. Okay, and if they keep everybody divided, arguing, fighting with each other, and then base the votes on popularity contests, who will give us the most money, who makes the best argument, who do we see most on television, then they can control the will of the majority. And that's the way it's operating. It's an incredible situation, but we saw that in Bush's immigration bill, they shut down the phone systems in Washington because the American people said, we're tired of this. And I think the question is, how are we supposed to believe the war on terrorism is real when they are doing nothing to secure the borders of this country? This is where I think they really stubbed their toe, because they want us fearful, they want us worrying about Al-Qaeda and terrorists all around the country, slipping into our country, slipping weapons of mass destruction into our country, and yet they haven't done one damn thing to secure the borders, and they don't want to. They can't because they don't want the border secure. They want them wide open because they are pushing hard, covertly, for their North American Union. Now, let me make myself clear on this. I am not philosophically opposed to globalization. We are one humanity. We are one planet. I can perfectly well see the time in the near future when somebody's going to ask you, where are you from? You're going to say, I'm from Earth. Okay? But my problem with globalization is that it's not on the table. We're not discussing it. We're not allowed to vote on it. It's all being rammed through covertly and under the table with these regulations, bureaucratic decisions. For example, in 2005 in Texas, Bush announced the agreement with Vicente Fox, then the president of Mexico, and Paul Martin, then the prime minister of Canada, for the Security and Prosperity Partnership. Okay, and of course this led to all these think tanks and groups meeting, and they're talking about now the Canamex Superhighway is going to stretch from southern Mexico all the way and branch into Canada. They are taking the moves to create the North American Union. And by any means and measure, this was a treaty with Mexico and Canada. Okay, and the Constitution clearly states that the President cannot make treaties with foreign countries without the approval of the United States Senate. Well, the Senate not only did not approve this, most of them didn't even know it was happening. And as a result, they took the agreements of this Security Prosperity Partnership, rolled it into the Commerce Department, who then began to send money down to the state transportation departments, got them all excited about building the components of this superhighway in Texas. For example, it's known as the Trans-Texas Corridor, and yet all it is the Texas leg of this Canamex superhighway. And so it's all being pushed off on us by edict, by rules and regulations, rather than by open debate and votes. It makes a mockery out of the whole idea of freedom and democracy.
Well, what about organized crime gangs? I mean, they have a history of influencing politics, media. I mean, look at the Gambino family, just one little family, what they were doing in New York.
And yeah, and that's just one family, and that's remnants of the old Sicilian, Italian, you know, mafia. But see, you have to understand, Eric, that all that kind of went by the wayside beginning in the 50s and 60s because all of the old mafia dons who had made their money in prohibition and drugs, prostitution, gambling, all through the 30s and the 40s, by then they were all millionaires, and their sons and their daughters became graduates of Harvard Business School and other big institutions. And if you'll think about the old gangster movies, the one goal they all had was to go legit. And so now they've gone legit. Now these people control, even though they still have that old mafiosa mentality, they now are not meeting in basements and wearing double-breasted suits and toting machine guns. They're meeting in the boardrooms of our greatest corporations, and this is what has led to this incredible breakdown of the trust between the people of the United States and the corporate fascist system that is now running the country.
Well, when you mentioned also about like the FBI and the CIA, you said something about how we have to look at who controls them. Well, who's controlling them? I mean, you got people like Chertoff up there.
Exactly.
He's not exactly, who is he following orders from? And where do you see the role of the whole Zionist movement, which is a gigantic worldwide movement? Where do you see that as playing a part in all of this?
Well, if you follow it right up to the top, you're talking about all the same people, okay? Chertoff, I believe, is one of those dual citizenship Americans. He has citizenship as American. He also has citizenship as in Israel, and I think that's despicable. If you're going to live in another country and proclaim yourself a citizen, and particularly if you're going to take a leadership office and the responsibility, then I think you should shed yourself of all other entanglements.
Well,
how do we know if he's? How do we know if Chertoff is operating in the best interest of the United States or the best interest of Israel?
Well, right,
and
he's
you,
our
you bring
FBI.
Up,
he's FBI
yeah.
Homeland Security.
Exactly. And you bring up Zionism, which is a whole thing. This is everyone, I think, needs to clearly understand that there are Hebrews, there are Jews, and then there are Zionists. Hebrews is the Semitic race, and there are plenty of Hebrews who are Christians, okay? Jews profess Judaism. That's their religion. Sammy Davis Jr. converted to Judaism. He certainly wasn't a Hebrew. Okay? And, of course, we all, I think, can agree that it's really not right to discriminate against a person simply on their race or on their religion. But then you have Zionism, which is a political movement, which is predominantly Jewish, perhaps, but there's plenty of non-Jews that are Zionist. And Zionism can be tracked back to the Balfour Declaration, which was a response to a letter from one of the Rothschilds, and it was a thinly disguised effort to create a foothold in the Middle East so they could gain control over the oil supplies there.
And what about these four families you say are in control? I think you said four families in control of the media.
Four corporations.
Oh, well, who are they?
Who are their directors? Who controls them?
Well, who are
A fifth corporation is Bertelsmann, Bertelsmann, also known as Bertie. And Bertie is the largest publisher in the English language, and yet it's owned by two German families, and it's a privately held corporation. And during the war, they produced the bulk of the Nazi war propaganda for the German army. And now they're in control of all of the major publishers and book clubs in this country, with the exception of two, HarperCollins and Robert Morrow, which are both owned by Rupert Murdoch and his news corporation. Now that should give the World War II veterans something to stop and think about. How did we get to a point to where the bulk of what we read is controlled by a corporation with Nazi antecedents?
Well, yeah, but then you look at the Nazi movement, even that's starting to look weirder and weirder, like the Zionists were in there. Their philosophy supposedly came from some guy named, Rosenberg?
Alfred Rosenberg.
Yeah, I mean, he's not even a German. He was like from,
No, he was Russian. A Russian
Jew. He's credited with the Nazi philosophy. And then you look, and there's a book out there that all the 150,000 possible Jews in the Nazi army. And see, then
right.
You wonder, what's the role of Zionism in that, in the Nazi movement?
Well, the role of Zionism in the Third Reich was simply this. The Zionists were okay. The Jews were not. And, in fact, the biggest stumbling block that the Zionists had to gaining a foothold in the Middle East by the creation of the State of Israel was coming, believe it or not, from the Jewish religious leadership, the rabbis and the leaders of the Jewish faith were saying, no, this is not right, and God didn't ever say that we're supposed to go and seize land in the Middle East and yada, yada, yada. And as a result, this is why we had the Holocaust. What they did effectively was wipe out the cream of Jewish religious leadership in Europe, which was the center point of Judaism, and as a result, that's when the Jewish faith largely fell into the hands of the Zionists. And they've done a magnificent job of trying to paint anyone who would simply object to their Zionist political objectives or try to criticize them as being anti-Semitic. But I have visited in Israel, and I want to tell you there are widespread and violent arguments over in Israel over the difference between Judaism and Zionism. But over here, since the Zionists control the mass media, you never really hear of these distinctions, and you certainly don't hear of the criticisms and the objections to Zionism.
Oh, yeah, you make an interesting point. Christopher Bolin mentioned that, too. You can actually learn a lot more by looking at the Israeli newspapers.
Right. Believe it or not, believe it or not, they seem to be much more free in Israel to actually discuss politics in the Middle East than we are here.
Well, yeah, see, then you realize our media is under unbelievable censorship. You
exactly.
Can't even discuss this stuff.
Exactly.
And over there,
that's exactly what I was saying.
Yeah, but see, then the role of the Bush family, how are we supposed to fix this? It's not just Bush. This is
right. Well, that gets back again to corporatism. We are now under the controls of the corporation. And the only upper hand that we have is that all of the corporations are dependent upon us as their consumers, whether it's insurance or gasoline, food, pharmaceuticals. They're dependent upon the people to continue to consume their products. And what we have to do is cast off the fear and begin united as Americans, and start working to exert our pressure. Again, the pressure from the public causes the defeat of Bush's immigration bill. We should and could be doing the same thing. If we're tired of the high prices of gasoline and how they just shoot up and then they drop down a little bit for a while until everybody cools off and then they shoot up again, then what we do is, for example, one thing we could do is we could choose one giant oil company, say Exxon, and for 1 month everybody buys their gas from anyone else except Exxon. And if Exxon sees their sales starting to droop, then they're going to be forced to lower their prices to try to get their consumers back. Then the other oil companies are going to be forced to lower their gasoline prices to get their consumers back. And that's how the consumers could control the corporations. Right now, we just blithely let the corporations do whatever it is they want to do, because we have been instilled ever since the beginning of the Reagan administration with the idea that business, whatever's good for business, is good for the United States. But as we're beginning to see, that's not necessarily true.
Well, that's true with the media, too. People could stop buying these newspapers, magazines.
Exactly. And actually, they are. All you have to do is look at the numbers. The number of the readership and audience for newspapers is just continues to sink. And that's because they realize that they're getting a lot of fluff, they're getting a lot of ads, and they're getting a lot of one-sided news.
There's still a long way to go. They're still making money. Same with the gambling casinos and...
Right. Well, it comes back to status quo. You know, I know my dad was an inveterate reader of the nightly newspaper. Every evening he plopped in his chair and he read that newspaper. And that was good, okay, because that kept him abreast of what was going on in the world. But today, because of the shrinking of the numbers of owners over the newspapers, and of course the old line is that freedom of the press belongs to the guy that owns the press. All right, and when you have only a handful of people who totally control the press, and we have a situation now, when I was a young man, in every major city there were any number of newspapers, 2, 3, 4, 6, okay, and if one was putting out propaganda or declining to present the true state of any story, then you always had a competitor who you'd look to even it all out and bring out the additional facts. But today, it's all down to one major newspaper in every major city, all under corporate control. And so unfortunately today, when you have people like my father who just sit down every evening and read that newspaper, they are under the impression that they are well supplied with news and information and that they are well informed citizens. But instead they are propagandized and they are living in a little rose colored matrix that is created around them, and that's why they cannot understand when things happen in the world and they go, how could that happen? You know, 9/11 is a good case in point. Everybody was properly shocked at the 9/11 attacks, okay? Although if you'd been keeping up and had been keeping up with the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center Tower, with the bombing of Khobar Towers over in the Middle East, the activities of Osama bin Laden as reported, then, you know, it shouldn't have come as any big surprise.
Well, right. Then you have the towers. You know, you still have the who put all the explosives in. Where did they come from? Why isn't anyone looking at Larry Silverstein?
Exactly.
But
why? And that's my question. I can understand somebody pulling off these atrocious acts because there were billions of dollars involved. there was lots of power and control in the equation. And that I don't agree with. I think it's uncomfortable, but I can at least understand it. What I don't understand is, why does the American people just lie down and let these people walk all over them, give them these fairy story, these official conspiracy theories backed by little or nothing, and then just keep hauling up a few paid experts? One thing I learned in covering court cases was that if you have enough money, you can always go out and hire an expert to testify to just about anything you want him to testify to.
Yeah, well, it's definitely serious.
And by the way, Eric, let me compliment you on the wonderful work that you did early on concerning the Twin Towers.
Oh, on the book and video?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, at that time, I didn't realize how big this mess was. But see, did you know?
Now you realize. Well, let's put it this way. I noticed that Silverstein, to cut to the chase, he and a couple other attending businesses bought a 99-year lease on the World Trade Center towers for a combined total of $3.5 billion. That's with a B. But they didn't pay that kind of money. They only paid $124 million up front as a down payment. And then he took control over the World Trade Centers. First thing he does was get some insurance policies with the biggest insurance companies in the world, Allianz of Germany, Swiss Re, and another Swiss insurance. So that shows you the international, the globalist tie-in with 9/11. And then he also then hired a company called Securicom to provide security for the World Trade Center, which just happened to be chaired by Wirt Walker III and his cousin Marvin Bush, the youngest brother of George Bush. And, of course, the Walkers are the Walker that is in George Herbert Walker Bush. So, in other words, the Bush and their attendant families gained control over the security of the World Trade Centers. And then they were attacked and they fell. And then Silverstein then goes to court and says, well, there were two planes, two attacks. I get double indemnity. And he was trying to collect seven-something billion dollars. But the courts wore him down and they negotiated. And he ended up making only $4.6 billion for a six-month investment of $124 million. Now, not too shabby. But he did not keep all that money himself. That money was spread out to the mortgage holders, and the largest mortgage holder was Blackstone Group, which is chaired by Peter G. Peterson, which I'm sure just by some weird coincidence is chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations. So now you can see how big and how worldwide, how globalist that event actually was.
Well, yeah, it has to have a lot of people, and it seems like the only way anything is going to change is if these people do something, because, I mean, people working for them, because the ordinary citizen doesn't seem to care, and it seems like the only thing we could possibly hope for is that people within this organization start wondering about their own leadership and changing direction themselves.
Well, that's kind of hard to do, though, when you're trying to support a family and you're doing quite well and you're making over $100,000 a year and with full perks and retirement and health benefits. And you really think hard before you chunk all that simply to stand up and tell people the truth.
No, I don't mean to tell the truth. I mean within the organization.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Telling the truth about what's going on within your own organization. And knowing full well that even if you do that, that they will come back with you with these deep pockets and the media will turn against you and you'll be just written off as a whistleblower, a disgruntled employee, plus you'll be styled as a conspiracy theorist and chances are nothing's going to get done about it. So why give up all the perks? On the chance that you're only going to be vilified.
Well, no, see, you bring up this point. That's right. It's why won't anyone talk? There's not a professor. There's not anybody with money. There's not anybody doing anything.
Well, because anybody with real money, chances are, either owns stock or is working for one of these large corporations that run this country.
Or they've committed
crime. And so in their mind, if the truth comes out, if there were huge investigation, if there were trials and convictions, it could cause a severe trauma to this country and their stock value might go down.
Well, plus, to get to be a billionaire, you probably can't do it legally anyway. So a lot of people...
They all have dirt on them, and that's, again, this is what happens when when you operate a country from the standpoint of just individual privatization, just whatever you want to do, instead of operating the country as it was created to be a nation of laws. And the law is supposed to apply equally to everyone, but obviously it doesn't apply equally to everyone. Just ask Scooter Libby.
Well, yeah, Kay Griggs says the same thing. They've got control over the media, the military and the courts, and you can get away with anything you want if you're part of the group.
Well, when you have control over the CIA, over the intelligence agencies, that's another thing, by the way. I don't know if you realize this, Eric, but at the height of the Cold War, there was basically only one intelligence organization in Soviet Union, and that was the KGB, okay? Today, we have more than 24 alphabet intelligence agencies, CIA, DIA, NSA, NRA, NRO. You just keep going, you know, who knows what these people are doing, because it's all national security. They're all operating in secrecy with no accountability. And when you have that kind of system, then you hire people who you can count on to keep their mouth shut. Plus, you have control over the military, the CIA, FBI, other organizations that are highly compartmentalized and on a need-to-know basis, and that most of employees have signed some sort of secrecy oath where they have pledged that they'll never talk about anything they learned during their government service. And, you know, most people are decent, honest people, and they're not going to violate that security oath with impunity. And this is how you keep the truth muzzled up and you keep everybody quiet. But as you know as well as I do, Eric, there are literally hundreds of academics, pilots, building engineers on the record saying that something is not right about 9/11.
Well,
but nobody hears about it because the media is controlled.
Yeah, and they never say very much. They're very, like, tiptoeing.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, you have a situation akin to a doctor. The doctor might be very blunt and honest with you, but when you start asking him about another doctor, he suddenly gets very circumspect, doesn't he?
Well, they're not going to want to start fights. But, see, the problem is there's so many people willing to, afraid to talk, willing to commit crimes. It's an enormous number that can be controlled this way.
That's right, exactly.
And then the majority of people, they don't care. And so it seems like the only way anything is going to happen is if the organization itself starts changing.
That's true, but I would correct you on this. I don't think the majority of people don't care. I mean, that implies that everybody's just apathetic and they don't really give a darn what goes on. And I don't quite believe that. I think what's happening there is a psychological situation in which the average person gets confused because you got one expert says one thing, you got another expert says, oh, no, it's this. You got one claim versus another counterclaim. And this is the way that the perpetrators have managed to cover up all the way back to the Kennedy assassination, is that there's never been a cover up from the standpoint of a lack of information. The cover up has been from obfuscation. They've thrown so many red herrings, so many conspiracy theories out, so many experts, so many charge and countercharge out there, that the average person just finally gets tired of it and kind of tunes out and says, I don't want to hear anymore. And I think that's what's going on, rather than them truly not caring. I think they do care, but they're confused. They don't know which way to turn. They don't know who to listen to. They don't know who's telling the truth. They want to believe in the government. They want to believe in their elected officials. And yet they can see by their own experience that they've been lied to for years over all kinds of things. And so as a result, they just kind of, they're like your computer when you give it conflicting commands. It just locks up, freezes, and shuts down.
Well, that makes
sense. And I think that's what about half the people in this country, they're locked up, frozen, and shut down.
Well, you have a good point. See, this is why I was saying to you, who's in control? Because this is the confusing part. If you listen to people like Alex Jones, you get nowhere. You hear New World Order, Luciferian controllers. I mean, that's not people. If you don't have names, you can't do anything. And see, this is what you bring up a very good point. Maybe that's...
Well, I could name names, okay? In fact, I'm going to a list of the Council on Foreign Relations, Paul Kreisberg, Michael Crippen, Juanita Krebs, Bernard Kushner, Sandra Kristoff, Irving Kristol, Peter Crow, Ann Kruger, Dave,
I know what you mean.
You know, I could name you names and names, but people don't know those names. It
doesn't
mean
anything. That's what we have to do. We have to identify them. But say, see, the problem then is, what about all the others that aren't in there? Like Rahm Emanuel, he's a Democrat. See, people blame Republicans, and then look at him.
Well, they're getting smarter. They're getting smarter. You know, up until recently, you could go to the, chances are, to the Council on Foreign Relations membership roster, and they're going to be pretty much packed with Republicans, and you could pretty well tell where the power's coming from, but that began to come out. People got smarter. The Council on Foreign Relations, which, believe me, in the 50s and 60s, nobody had really even heard of out in the hinterlands, and same thing. I can remember at the time of the Kennedy assassination, because I was already on a path to journalism, I did know about the CIA, but I didn't know much about it, and most people down here in Texas had never even heard of it, okay? And nobody, and even right now, the bulk of the people on the street do really not know what the National Security Agency is. They don't know who runs it. They don't know what the budget is. They don't know what they do.
That's right.
Okay? And so, you know, if you can't even explain to them about the National Reconnaissance Office or the National Security Agency, how are they expected to absorb names of individuals?
Well, that's right. But I mean, talking about just like New World Order the way Alex Jones does, is that maybe what part of the problem is, like you mentioned, they're confused. It's confusing people.
Well, it is a problem, but I don't think it is the cause of the problem. And in fact, I'll tell you something, as a person who was trained and who has experienced and dedicated as a journalist, I had a big problem with Alex Jones for a while, okay? Until I came to the realization that he does not proclaim himself as a journalist. He is an activist. Okay? And an activist sometimes has to do street theater. They have to, you know, talk in hyperboles. They have to sometimes sensationalize to get people's attention and to get people to at least thinking about the issues. So at this point, while I don't agree with everything Alex Jones says, and I certainly don't agree with his tactics but that's just because it's not my tactics.
Right.
I have to admit that once you understand that he is an activist and not a journalist, then you go, well, okay, he's doing his thing.
Yeah. So, well, if you were in control of the nation, then what would you tell the police or the FBI? How would you solve any of this? I mean, you'd have to give them some orders. You couldn't just say, okay.
Well, the solving of it is real simple. All we have to do is return to our given constitutional republic. Okay? What's happening in the United States today is not because of any kind of outmodedness due to the Constitution. It's due to the fact that we are not following the Constitution. For example, the Constitution clearly states that only Congress has the power to declare war. Okay? Not the President, the Congress. Now, some people go, yeah, well, Congress, they're a bunch of idiots. They don't know what they're doing anyway. And there could be true. But if you go a little further, you'll think, wait a minute, if you cannot convince 3/4 of the Congress of the United States that we need to go to war somewhere, then chances are we don't need to go to war there.
Yeah, well, they did it.
But see, we're bypassing all that. That's all by the boards now. Now, ever since the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, which pulled us into Vietnam in a full-blown war, we've been operating under the National Security Council and decisions of the President. And while I'm on the National Security Council, Eric, do you know who exactly officially comprises the National Security Council?
I probably don't.
Okay, it's 4 people. The President, the Vice President, the Secretaries of Defense and State. Now think about it. 3 of those people are appointed by the President. So the National Security Council is actually the executive branch of the United States, the President. And yet, think about it. Every time we've invaded Grenada or Panama or Kosovo or Haiti or wherever, it's always been the National Security Council that's given the word. They have bypassed Congress. And in doing so, they have bypassed the news media and the public of the United States in their war-making capacity and in many other areas.
Well, Congress lets them, too.
Yes, because Congress is on the payroll of the corporations.
Well, yeah, but see, the corporations, you see, it comes back to, it's not every corporation. I know a lot of people are in it. This is the problem. It's so big. There's so many people in it.
And that's true. Well, let me give you another example. Bill Clinton, who I don't have a whole lot to say about good, nevertheless tried to propose some legislation that was going to force the FCC to force the news media to give equal opportunity to alternative candidates. Now, doesn't that sound like a reasonable thing in a just and free democratic society? And yet it was shot down by Senator John McCain, who's now running for president. Of course he wants it shot down. He doesn't want to hear anybody. We don't want to hear from somebody like Ron Paul. We're going to act like he doesn't exist.
Well, do you see Ron
Paul? Even though he's the only candidate that did not vote for us to go to war in Iraq.
Well, do you think Ron Paul is better than the others?
At least he's addressing the proper issues and saying the right things. But, of course, Ron Paul's a politician, and my advice on any politician is don't listen to what they say. Watch what they do. But I watch what Ron Paul does. He has refused to take the pay increases of Congress. He's refused to take their very lavish retirement benefits. He voted against our invasion of Iraq. He has often called for an audit of the Federal Reserve System. He's saying the right things. Of course, Bush said a lot of the right things, too. The problem is he hasn't done any of them.
Well, yeah, but see, even if Ron Paul's elected, what can he do to change any of this by himself?
What it would do is probably mark him as a target. For example, Robert Kennedy told students in California just a few days before he was assassinated that he really couldn't do anything about the death of his brother until he had the power of the presidency. Which means he knew what I know, or you know, which is you have to be able to control the military and the FBI and the CIA and these other two dozen alphabet national security organizations and plus being a catbird seat to lead the public to demand justice and demand equality in business and in corporate life and everything else. And of course, when he got the California nomination, they shot him in the head.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and that's a big problem too. And believe me, you better believe nobody talks about this, but you better believe that most of those congressmen know that if they actually speak out and they actually try to put something legislation out that's going to really benefit the public, which would probably be to the detriment of the corporations, then their plane's going to crash, just like Paul Wellstone.
Yeah, but see, like the corporate leaders are not the ones doing the assassinations. They got to have somebody.
No, it's not. And that's another thing you have to understand, that just like the President of the United States, his is a titular office. His is an official office. He doesn't really have the power. Somebody else is telling George W. Bush what to do. And I mention that because in the corporate structure, it's the same thing. We have these presidents of large corporations that are raking in millions as just salary, not to mention the perks and the benefits and the retirement package and everything else. But even those people, they are not necessarily bad, evil people. They are just efficient administrators, okay? You have to look past them to who gives them their marching orders, okay? And now we're talking about boards of directors, and sometimes it's not even the chairman of the board of directors. Maybe the chairman of the board of directors is a good guy, but you got one director sitting over there, and he's got 6% of the stock in the company, and nobody else has more than 5. That one guy controls the company, and they know it. We don't. We just look at it as a faceless corporation.
Well, yeah, but it's the lower-level people that are actually carrying out the assassinations, the putting explosives into. See, this is what I'm saying. A lot of these people may not even realize what they're working for.
No, they don't. In fact, would you agree with me on this, Eric, that there were probably dozens, perhaps hundreds, of people within the military, within NORAD, possibly within the FAA, and within other government agencies that carried out actions on and after 9/11 that actually contributed to the event and to the cover-up, but they really didn't realize what they were doing.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
They were only following their orders.
I'm sure it was a shock to a lot of people that, oh, my God, that's what I did?
Yeah,
but this is what I'm saying. That this is why I say I think what might happen is if the people that are working for this start realizing what's going on, this might be what changes the thing.
I agree, but there's also going to have to be a sea change in the attitude of the public. And when somebody comes forward as a whistleblower, instead of being vilified in the media and shunned by the public that doesn't want to get their hands dirty or mixed up in something, they should be hailed as heroes. And they should be, we should put up a public fund to, make sure that their bills are paid and that they can live and do well, even after they have blown the whistle on illegal and corrupt government operations. But that's not what's happening, is it?
No. No, but see, the military, if they would just start wising up, if the police would start wising up, if we could just get more people to realize what they're doing and then look at their organization, because there's a lot of people that are helping this, indirectly or directly.
But hey, go back and think about what's happened since the invasion of Iraq. We've had 8 retired generals. They're retired, which means they don't have control over them anymore. If you're in the military, you have to do what your superior tells you, and if your superior tells you to shut up, you have to shut up.
Right.
And that's at the core of the military. Discipline is the core of the military, and if there's no discipline, then you're not going to have much of a military. But yet, we saw 8 generals that were retired come out and call for Rumsfeld's resignation, which he eventually did. And that, to me, was astounding, because military people just don't do that. But they did, because they were doing the very thing that you're talking about.
Yeah, because what I see is a possibility. When you have secrecy in an organization, nobody except the people at the very top know truly what's going on. Everybody
exactly.
below them is only being told what
they're just following orders.
Well, they're also being told what they want to hear. And,
right.
And you see, this allows the group to look one. The people within it, the majority of them, might think they're working for one group, and really they're following somebody else's orders and getting tricked over and over and over.
And it goes,
secrecy has got to stop. We've got to stop this secrecy.
Exactly. And it goes from the top to the bottom. I recall reading a situation over in Iraq where an Iraqi cab driver was stopped at an American checkpoint. He and his cab were taken to an American base. He was held for a few hours. Then he was released, and they said, okay, you can go on your way. And he said, yeah, but I need my driver's license. And they said, well, okay, you have to drive over to this certain police station, and they'll give you your driver's license back. But on the way, the cab driver had some car problems, and he pulled into a garage to get his cab checked out, and guess what? They found the trunks and the door panels crammed with explosives. Okay, so I don't have to draw a picture for you what would have happened if he had pulled up beside that police station. Boom, and he would be another suicide bomber. See how easy it is to do a false flag operation?
Well, it is. Yeah, that's right. And see, the people doing a lot of their dirty work may think, it's like Apollo. You know, you could easily fool Americans into faking that without them and tell them that, you know, it's good for America. And they wouldn't even realize it. And then others wouldn't even realize it's been faked.
That's right.
Having worked
around police departments for a good part of my life, I see what you're saying, and the illustration is, if one policeman tells another policeman something, the other policeman just accepts it.
That's right.
Because it never enters their mind that another cop would lie to them.
That's right. They're more used to, they're like the military. They follow their orders. That's what I've
right.
noticed with them. They are more willing to follow orders and be a good boy. They're like good
right.
boys and good girls. You know, they do what they're told. They don't question authority much.
Well, and isn't that exactly what we put a lot of Germans on trial for at the Nuremberg war crimes trials? And their argument was, well, I didn't make the decisions. I was only following orders. And we set the standard. We said, I'm sorry, there comes times when you have to exercise your individual action.
Yeah, your sense.
And you have to be responsible for what you're doing and look beyond just blindly following orders. We set that precedent. And now today we're falling in the same trap. Well, I was just following orders. Well, you know, my leader told me to do this, so I did it.
Right. They're not paying attention. Well, yeah, they're too trusting of their government, and our government
right.
is terrible. And it's not just ours. It's all over. And the secrecy in the CIA, the FBI, how many people in the CIA even know what's going on within their own group?
Oh, they don't. They don't. In fact, when I was researching the Nazi beginnings of Al-Qaeda, this former U.S. assistant attorney stated that he had plenty of friends in the CIA, and none of them were even aware of all this. They didn't know all this background.
I know what's
so, that. So, you know, when they're told to go and go out and find somebody with Al-Qaeda, that's just what they do. They don't go and research to find out, well, exactly what is Al-Qaeda.
Well, that's right. I think the lesson to learn from all of this is all these secret agencies, secret organizations, they all have to stop. There is no protection against this. Even the people in the organization have no way to know who is really running the show.
That's true. And I'll tell you something I figured out a long, long time ago is that the only way that you, Eric, or me, Jim, as individuals can guarantee our individual liberty and freedom is to guarantee every single person's freedom and liberty. Because once you start the selective process and you say, well, I'm going to be free and I'm going to have liberty, but now Eric, I don't know, man, we may have to curtail his activities and we can't let him say everything. And if he speaks out too much, we're going to have to arrest him under the Patriot Act. Once you start that selection process, then it's open-ended. You know, it's just like the Pastor Niemöller said over in Nazi Germany. You know, they came for the Jews. I wasn't a Jew, so I didn't say anything. Came for the Freemasons. I wasn't a Freemason, so I didn't say anything. Came for the trade union. I want to train you. I didn't say anything. He said when they finally came for me, there was nobody to turn to.
Well, yeah, that's what's going on. So we got to get, if we could just get more people to complain, bring this stuff out on television, stop the secrecy, stop the fear. It's the only thing
Amen.
We're ever going to do.
I'm with you, but let's face it, Eric, most people.
They don't respond.
Most people are more concerned with putting food on the table, holding on to their little job, and what sports event's going to be on TV tonight.
Well, that's right. That's what I think is happening. So it makes you wonder what's going to happen. I don't know what'll happen.
Well, I'm afraid that I can tell you what happened, and this is what a cousin of mine who was an FBI agent told me years ago, back in the early 70s, because I basically asked him the same question back then when they were having riots in the city and anti-war protests and all like that, and I said, you know, what's it going to take for the American people to, you know, finally stand up and say, I've had enough, let's change things, and he said quite seriously, that they're going to have to be hungry and in the streets.
Well, that's quite possible.
Exactly. I wanted to ask, Jim, has anyone approached you or have you thought to make the terror conspiracy into a movie just like you did the Crossfire?
I think that would be great, but I'm not a movie maker, so that's going to have to come from somebody that knows how to make movies.
But I would say
that movies are the way to reach a majority of people. That's why it's so damn difficult to get a major film produced, and that's why it goes through a very convoluted, complex system of committees and decisions and studios and everything else, so they can weed out anybody that's really trying to say something. One of the only exceptions I can think of is Michael Moore, you know, and he's apparently now getting some pretty good success with his new film, Sicko, which I've not yet seen. But even then, he pulls his punches and does not actually, you know, go for the jugular because he knows that he has to play ball to a certain extent just to maintain his position in society.
Exactly. Well, this has been awesome to have you on and to go over
your... Well, we covered a lot of ground.
You certainly did.
And I hope that anybody who listens to this, it would give them pause and at least get them to start waking up, looking around, and making up their own mind about things and not being guided by the matrix of the media.
Exactly. So the book, again, it's called The Terror Conspiracy, Deception, 9/11, and the Loss of Liberty. And what is your new book that's coming out in the fall?
Psi-Spies, PSI Spies.
And mention your website as well, so that all our listeners can go on there.
The website is jimmars.com, J-I-M-M-A-R-R-S, two R's in Mars.com.
Well, Jim, this has been absolutely delightful. We were honored to have you on. We just bombarded you with one question after another, and you're the all-time favorite, I think the greatest investigative journalist that America has. So I honor you, Jim, that you're so kind enough to have done this interview. it's always such a pleasure to have you on. So we're going to probably get you on again with your new book so we can have you go over that as well. So thank you again, Jim Mars.